Welcome back to Gerwick.net, G-E-R-W-E-C-K.net, Gerwick.net, your source on the World Wide Web since 1997 for all your pro wrestling news. And this month, during the month of March, we definitely encourage you to go to Gerwick.net and vote on the greatest Intercontinental Champion Tournament. The round one is coming to an end very quickly. We definitely want your input on who's going to win, well, not only the first round, but who's going to win this tournament. Who's going to be voted the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time? And a couple of guys that we're going to talk about are, of course, in the tournament. In this particular podcast, we're going to talk Brett versus Sean. And we're going to take a little bit of a break in this podcast from talking specifically about current topics. I think if you go back and look at the audio section at Gerwick.net, we've covered a lot of WWE Network. We've covered a lot of CM Punk, Sting, WrestleMania. And, of course, we'll talk about that more as more information is known and stories break. But today, myself and Frank D, we're going to tackle a topic we've been talking about doing a podcast on for quite a while. And after I saw the Beyond the Ring portion of WWE Network and Brett versus Shawn, it got my mind flowing. And today we're going to talk about that great rivalry. And today Frank is back, and this should be a very interesting podcast.
Yeah, definitely. This is one of the topics that, you know, as part of wrestling, you know, folklore, people still talk about to this day. Was it real? Was it a work? You know, we're going to delve right into that tonight.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the prelude to 97, the Montreal Screwjob, the aftermath, what could have been, conspiracy theories. And we're going to go into a number of different angles with this particular topic, because I think there are so many things that we can jump into. But the first thing we want to do is start with the Montreal incident itself. And going back to the time frame, Frank, was Bret Hart is the WWF champion. It's the Survivor Series. It's Montreal. Shawn Michaels is the challenger for the event. Bret is leaving the company. It's well known that Bret is leaving the company. He is basically being forced out in 1996 in the summer. Actually, in the fall, I guess it would have been September. He agrees to a 20-year contract, $20 million. So that's what was reported. Turning down a WCW offer. He wanted to stay. He was loyal to the company. He wanted to stay put. And it caused quite a problem in November of 1997 going into Survivor Series, because it was Bret versus Shawn. And I think this particular incident that we're going to talk about first, the Montreal Screwjob, was really caused by a conversation that was talked about in the documentary of Bret versus Shawn, because Bret, of course, talked to Shawn and he tells Sean, you know, I have no problem putting you over whatsoever. And Sean says, well, that's great. I'm glad to hear it. But you know what, Bret? I'm not going to do the same for you. And thus, we come to November of 97. And when it came time to decide an outcome for that match, well, we got the screw job. And I know there's a lot of theories behind, you know, was it shoot? Was it a work? Frank, I personally have never bought into the theory that it was a work. But I know you have some interesting perspective on this particular topic.
Yeah. First of all, I just never really understood, and as I've gotten older now and gotten wiser to the business and the way it works and passing the torch and, you know, looking up at the lights and doing the job, you know, and doing the business, I never understood Bret Hart's reasoning for wanting to not get pinned in Montreal. I just never understood it. And I don't understand it, because if Bret, I think the whole thing is that Bret, you know, watching that DVD you're talking about, Bret versus Shawn, Bret probably would have put anybody else over in Montreal except Shawn Michaels. And the whole thing all stems back to that conversation where Shawn tells Bret, I'm not going to put you over. I'm not going to do the same thing for you. And it just automatically starts a beef there. And, you know, this is coming off the tales, you know, of the click and all the stuff that was going on behind the scenes there. And Shawn Michaels wanting to become the champion at you know, the WrestleMania, what was it, WrestleMania 12, the Iron Man match. And Shawn basically having a plan of, I'm not really going to work with Bret after I have the belt. I'm going to work with Nash and Hall and Triple H, and let's get a couple of matches out of, you know, X-Pac. So, just a lot of, you know, just a lot of stuff going on there that even right now talking about, I just don't understand.
I think, too, when I think back to that period, and, of course, it all stems from that conversation we just talked about, you know, Bret talking to Shawn and Shawn talking to Bret. know, at the end of their run in WWF. And I think they alluded to this on the documentary, is that, you know, Sean makes that comment, "I'm not going to put you over, Brett." So Brett goes to Vince and says, "You know, I talked to Sean, and Sean said he's not going to do this. He would not put me over. So let's have a meeting about it." So they have this meeting, and it never comes up.
Right.
Which is pretty odd that, I mean, at this time period, you know, you're coming to the end of WWF's tenure for Brett, and he's leaving. He's still your champion. And that's
30 days, I believe, yeah, creative control, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're Vince McMahon, you want to get this settled because, A, you've made kind of a boneheaded decision to let Brett go while he's still your champion. I mean,
right.
You know, when we see over the course, I mean, remember, like when Medusa got released, she was still the WWF Women's Champion. So, I mean, make these kind of boneheaded decisions, and, of course, that was a much smaller scale than this topic we're talking about here, but... You know, they have this meeting, and Brett wants to talk about, you know, what Sean said. And I think Vince doesn't mention this or doesn't bring this up in the meeting because I think Vince probably realized Sean probably said that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you got to remember the time frame, too. Shawn Michaels in 1996, 1997 is not the same Shawn Michaels of 2013, 2014.
Right.
This is a totally different character altogether. And I think if you watch a documentary – he basically admits, I mean, he was very immature at that time frame. And to make that comment, I don't think, you know, going back now, Sean would make that comment today if he was active in 97.
No.
But he did make that comment then. So that would have been a time to have that address at that meeting. And, of course, I think there was some frustration on Brett's part that, you know, they have this meeting and they didn't address that Sean made this comment. And that's ultimately why, Frank, I made this decision. I'm not going to put HBK over in Montreal when I'm trying to do the professional thing by saying to you, I'll put you over. And then your response is, but no, I wouldn't put you over.
Well, you know, it all goes back to in the documentary that Shawn Michaels just really never felt that Bret Hart respecting him. He just always felt that every single night that he went out there to perform, he was always trying to please Bret. He was always trying to win Bret's respect. And I don't think he ever did that. I think at a certain point in time, Sean just said, "The hell with this guy." And that's where I think a lot of the problems start. I think Brett, him and Hart had a big of an ego back then, just like they all did. You know, I mean, the guy was a WWF champion. He got the strap before Sean ever did. So that's an ego. And especially when you feel that somebody is not on your level. So, I mean, looking back at the situation now, Sean, you know, just wants Brett's respect. I can seriously understand why Sean would say, "Hey, you know something? You don't respect me, so why am I going to put you over? I'm not going to put you over. I'm glad you want to put me over, but I'm not going to do the same thing for you." And on top of that, too, hey, was Bret Hart really box office at the time? Got to put all these things into perspective. That's why Vince wouldn't want to honor that contract.
I think, too, going back to the documentary, of course, we're going to make a lot of references to the documentary. We're also going to make some references to the Wrestling with Shadows, which I think is the best documentary ever made because it's very organic. And a lot of the documentaries you're going to see from WWF, WCW are sit-down interviews that they recollect certain topics. But this was shot when all this was going on.
Yeah.
And I think if you've never seen Wrestling with Shadows, I mean, really go out of your way to find it because I think it's just the best documentary ever made. I mean, what a time to be filming, you know, Bret Hart's career at a time when it's the most pivotal of his career. He's got this big, because I can think of it, he's in the swimming pool. He's talking about them getting this offer from WCW, and you know, it's what, $9 million for 3 years, and I don't really want to leave. I want to stay with Vince. I'm loyal to the company. I've had a relationship with Vince for how many years? You know, Vince bought Stampede Wrestling from my father and brought in Jim Neidhart, and obviously my brother-in-law, two brother-in-laws work for Vince. My brother works for Vince. So I want to stay, you know, I want to stay here. I want to be loyal to WWF. I understand WCW has offered me a lot of money, but end of the day, I want to stay here. But, you know, specifically going back to what we're talking about here, a lot of the misconceptions was the heat between Sean and Brett going back to this time frame. And I think they cleared this up by watching the Brett versus Shawn documentary, because I think the real heat, at least people were perceiving, came from WrestleMania 12, the Iron Man match, when Shawn Michaels won the overtime period, won the championship, and allegedly told, you know, Brett to get the hell out of the ring.
Right.
And then the next day or shortly thereafter, Brett's having a conversation with Owen, and Owen's like, yeah, you know, everybody picked up on that. You know, he told you to get the hell out of the ring, and everybody thinks you have a lot of heat now. And Brett's being the smart psychologist, says, hey, that's great. Everybody thinks we hate each other. Let's go with that. And that's when a lot of the animosity, you know, away from the two was built up, and that kind of led to the situation. But I think what totally broke the camel's back was that conversation. We keep going back to it. And I just think the unprofessionalism of Shawn at that time to make that comment. I mean, Brett was, well, I think it had they not made that comment, Frank, Brett would have had no problems putting over Shawn there. And I know people keep saying, I mean, him not wanting to lose in Montreal is like John Cena not wanting to lose the championship in the United States. And I always, and I appreciate that. I think it's a little bit different in that, you know, WWF doesn't run as many shows in Canada as they do in the United States, but I understand, you know, I understand the argument. But I mean, if you take away that comment, you know, we're probably not here today talking about this topic, because if Shawn never makes that comment, I think Brett loses clean in the middle of the ring in Montreal, and we never have this screw job, and who knows, you know, how that changes the wrestling business looking back.
Yeah, a lot of stuff would be totally different.
Yeah.
But going back to, you know, that initial conversation they had in the locker room back there, if that conversation, like you said, had never taken place, Montreal never would have had it. I believe they would have went out there, they would have had a hell of a match like they normally would. And Brett probably would have stayed in the WWF and not have been kicked in the head by Goldberg. And what happened to Shawn might have still happened to Shawn, but Montreal wouldn't have happened.
And of course, the thing with the Wrestling with Shadows, which is very powerful, is that you have a chance to listen to Brett and Vince McMahon have a meeting before the main event match. And I remember, you know, Vince is outside the arena and his kids are coming in, and he's, you know, I got to talk to Brett. Hey, Brett, you want a coffee? Let's come in and have this meeting. And what's, you know, what's Vince talking about? He's talking about, I guess we'll do a DQ finish. We'll do the schmoz, right?
Right.
And this gets picked up on the microphone. It picks it up that, you know, clearly Vince is under the impression, as his Brett is, that they're going to do a DQ finish. And that was agreeable. And then you have the situation where Brett comes out and talks to his wife. And what's the reaction of the wife? I don't believe it.
Right.
And I mean, that is so powerful. You can go back and watch that. It's like, she knew that this was not on the level. And she knew that Vince was going to screw her husband that night.
Yep. Definitely.
And it's amazing to me how perceptive she is. And then there's that situation where afterwards, you know, she's given all the flack to Triple H or Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and he's just standing there and like, you knew this, Hunter, you were in on it. And he's just kind of, you know, shaking his head. And you know, something that was ever really cleared up in the documentary on the WWE Network, I don't know if they ever cleared up the heat between Brett and Hunter.
You know what? I believe they have. I think I heard a shoot interview where Brett said that he's really trying to like Hunter these days. And I don't think there's a problem. I don't really think they have an issue anymore. I think all that's in the past because of the position that Triple H is in now. And Triple H's position is just like Vince. It's whatever is best for business. They think that, you know, he literally believes that. You know, you got to put that ego down. So, I mean, I was reading last night in the Garden, they had a house show. He mentioned Bret Hart. As
that's
you
good.
Know, as you mentioned, Brett, as when you talk about the Garden, you talk about WrestleMania Immortals, you talk about Hogan and you know, San Martino, and you talk about Bret Hart. And you know, people like myself, you know, going with the Daniel Bryan angle. But I think they have a good relationship. I mean, if you remember back that on that right before the Night of Champions, or not Night of Champions, excuse me, TLC that's last year, they were all in the ring together. We got Bret in the ring, Shawn in the ring, and Triple H. When Triple H is doing that speech, when they were in Seattle, Washington, I believe it was.
Okay.
So,
that's good to know because it's so long ago. And, I mean, really, the heat really at that time was with Shawn because he knew that Shawn Michaels was in on it. And Shawn Michaels could have denied that he didn't know what was going to happen. And, of course, there was the whole locker room scene afterwards where they have words. And, like, Shawn, are you in on this? And he's like, I swear to God, I didn't know anything about it.
Right.
And then, of course, you have the incident where Mr. McMahon, or would have been Vince McMahon before he became the character Mr. McMahon, runs into Bret Hart's fist. And, I mean, a lot of this is caught on the Wrestling with Shadows. So if you watch that documentary and then go back and watch the Wrestling with Shadows, I mean, they can really pick up on each other, go more in depth. I don't think they really got into what happened afterwards as much on the documentary that they showed on the WWE Network. But, I mean, what a fascinating time. And, of course, all this is picked up on the Wrestling with Shadows, DVD. And he said, that's a Stu Hart call. And I think, too, going back to, Vince, I think Vince, when he got spit on, I think he realized, he owes it to Bret to go backstage and face Bret.
Well,
and I can't believe that he's surprised that Bret would strike him.
Well, the story that everybody's heard that goes around with that is that the Undertaker actually made Vince
go to right.
Bret and say he needed to apologize now. And before right. this actually happened, a lot of the wrestlers backstage sensed that something was going to happen. Just like Bret's wife sensed something was going to happen.
Right.
I mean, Bret, they told Bret, don't get in any type of situations where you're going to be in a submission move or where you're going to be on the ground. I don't know who told him. I think Vader told him that. Just be careful is what they were telling him. Well, watch out. Okay, something's funny. So it's just funny to me how Bret's wife at the time, she just was not naive to anything. She was smart. Bret was just, my relationship with Vince. It's like a father-son relationship. He bought Stampede from my dad. He said, my family works here. I can trust Earl. Earl was sorry.
Right.
He swore on his kids that, he swore on his kids' lives that he's got my back. He's not going to do anything or anything happen. But all these people were snakes. Gerald Briscoe and all these guys. They were just crooked. I think, I even think they left Pat Patterson out of the plan.
I think you made a good point. I think why Bret trusted the situation, and he ultimately was put into the submission maneuver at the end, was because he did trust Earl, and that Earl swore to him, I'm not gonna let anything like that happen to you, Bret. So I think he felt he could trust Earl.
Right.
And and I think it was pretty telling when he said, looking back now on it, if I was in Earl's shoes, what would I have done? I probably would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
You still work. I mean, when tomorrow comes, when the next day comes, yeah, Bret's out the door, but Earl Hebner still has a job with WWF at that time.
Right.
So, I mean, you got to think about your income, your family, and it's a tough call. But, going back quickly to the Undertaker, yeah, I mean, that is the story that, after the screw job, Vince goes back to his office and locks himself in his office.
Right.
While Bret is on a tirade, he's back there, facing Shawn Michaels and Triple H, Hunter Hearst-Helmsley, and you have the Undertaker come, supposedly, that was always a story, Undertaker go to Mr. McMahon's office and basically demand that Vince go face Bret. And I'm thinking back at that period, who else could have done that? Who else could have went to Vince's office and said, you owe it to Bret to go face him? Because, I mean, this is before Triple H was dating Stephanie, obviously. So there was nobody in that company at that time would have had that much clout to go to Mr. McMahon in his office, locked in his office, and say, I think you owe it to Bret to go face him face to face.
Yeah, Taker would have been that guy to do that because Taker was the locker room leader there. Taker was the measuring stick at the time. So, yeah, I definitely believe the story of him going to do that. I mean, it's not like you would have expected a guy like, you know, Sid to go do it. You know, or who else would have been there?
Well, the thought I always would have was, what if Owen would have went to the office? Or what if the Bulldog would have went to the office?
Yeah.
And say, hey, you owe it to my brother-in-law. You owe it to my brother to at least explain yourself of what the hell happened out there tonight.
Yeah, I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to open the door except for Undertaker that night.
Right.
More than likely. And I think the one thing that could have avoided the situation, something I know we've talked about before, and they did address it on the DVD, the documentary, is that the night before, there was a house show in Detroit with Joe Louis Arena, and they actually had a six-man match. But they could have changed it to a singles match with Brett versus Shawn. Since Brett didn't want to put HBK over in Montreal, they could have switched it to the championships the night before in Detroit. And then the next night on the pay-per-view, you still could have Brett versus Shawn, except now Brett would be the challenger and HBK would be the champion. I don't think that would have changed a whole lot because I'm thinking back to 1997. I mean, that's the year, you know, Gerwig.net was born.
Right.
And certainly the internet wasn't as big as it was in 1997. I mean, you did have some internet out there. The WWE website wasn't nearly what it was today. And obviously pre-WWE Network, obviously. And then the internet just wasn't as big. I mean, they could have pulled that off. Very few people would have probably realized there was a switch. And I think they wouldn't have lost a lot of business, Frank, because I think people were going to order the show because they wanted to see Brett versus Shawn. And not a lot of changes because they still would have saw a great match, except in the end, we switched the title the night before. And
Right. Everybody
should be happy then, right?
Right. You would think so. But then it's like, okay, if you switch the championship the night before, since Brett has a big problem with losing Shawn in Montreal, then what do you do when you go to Montreal the next night? I mean, do you even acknowledge that the WWF Championship changed hands the night before in Detroit?
No, I think you have to at that point.
Yeah, but it's like, what does it do to our main event? Do we change the main event to something else?
You didn't change the main event. The main event is still Brett versus Shawn.
Right, but it's like if the word got out that this match has already happened in Detroit, in which Brett has already beaten Shawn, if they come to the rematch in Montreal with Shawn as a champion, Brett has creative control. What if Brett wants to play his creative control card and say, okay, I want the belt back?
True. I don't think Brett would have done that because he's leaving.
I don't think Brett would have done a lot of things they said he would have done, including taking the belt over to WCW. You know, Brett was a traditionalist. Brett would never do what I like to call it the Medusa. He would never do the Medusa.
No, absolutely not.
So I just think they came up with any excuse they could to get rid of the guy.
Well, WWE made their I'm gonna go back to WWF. It's WWF.
Uh-huh.
WWF made this mess.
Right.
Twofold because one, Vince makes the decision. Whenever it is, if it's after SummerSlam, it's between SummerSlam and Survivor Series, he makes the decision, while Brett is still his champion, that basically, Brett, you're leaving the company. I signed you to the 20-year deal, but you know what? Do me a favor. Do WWF a favor. Call Eric and see if you can get your WCW deal. So Vince makes the mess initially. Then, you let it get to this point that he actually acknowledges is on the documentary that he's over his dates that he's contractually obligated to wrestle. I think he said he had 275 dates on his deal, and he was, by November he was already over 275.
Wow.
So here's November, and he's got like 300 dates already worked. So he's not even contractually obligated. And I'm sure, he does Survivor Series because obviously he's going to get a paycheck out of it. He's going to get a bonus. But contractually, he didn't even have to work Survivor Series. He didn't even have to work Detroit the night before.
No.
So here's Vince. You've made this mess. You basically fired Brett while he's still your champion. Now he's over the number of dates he has. Remember when Jeff Jarrett was, the IC champion?
Oh, I gotta forget.
And his dates were up, and his contract was up, and he said, you know what? You want me to work tonight? You better pay me. I mean, Brett could have done the exact same thing. Look, you know what? I'm contractually, I did all my dates. I'm done. I could go WCW now probably at that point. My dates are up.
And maybe that's what Vince was afraid of, that Brett would go to WCW and would take the belt. I mean, let's be honest here real quick about Mr. Jarrett. If Jarrett had never pulled that stunt, then there would have been a TNA. Because Jarrett would have went right back to the WWF when WCW shut down. Problem with Brett is, Brett, you know, when this whole Montreal deal happened, I think Brett had to sit out his whole 90 days before he even went to Turner, correct?
I think that's what they agreed to. Didn't they agree to that when they were still...
Yeah.
So I think they basically worked that out with WCW at that time.
Right.
That he wasn't going to show up. I mean, you got to remember, Brett didn't show up. I mean, it's not like he showed up on Nitro the next night.
Right.
I don't think he showed up until January, correct?
No, he actually showed up in the middle of December.
Okay, December. Okay, so it was already...
He was going to be on that Starrcade paper. His first appearance was going to be at Starrcade 97 in Washington. That was the infamous match with Hogan versus Sting for the world title that they botched.
Well, that's essentially 6 weeks after Survivor Series then.
Right.
Or close to it. I mean, at least a month afterwards, then he shows up in WCW.
Right.
I mean, Brett, and I agree, I think it was kind of ridiculous for him to say, I don't want to lose in Montreal, because it's essentially saying John Cena doesn't want to lose. CM Punk, Randy Orton, they don't want to drop their championships in the United States. It's the same argument, I understand that. But, I mean, he did say that he would forfeit the title, he'd lose the next night on Raw. I think he would have got pinned the next night on Raw. He could have forfeited the title the next night. I mean, we've seen how many times Shawn Michaels give up the championship.
Yeah, I mean, he lost a smile.
He loses a smile, so it was okay for Shawn. Of course, the difference with, of course, Shawn is that he's staying with the company, more than likely.
Right.
But, I mean, this situation, you know, people want to say that you're very critical of Brett, and I think people are critical of Brett because a lot of people have that, he's a crybaby, we don't like him. So they look back at that situation and say, well, Brett acted totally unprofessionally at that time. But I think Brett tried his best, you know, minus the Montreal, to do what was right, and he would lose. He would have lost. I think there was also one scenario where he would have stayed until the next pay-per-view, the December pay-per-view, and lost, in a four-way match,
right.
I believe, at one time. I mean, right. There was a lot of scenarios they could have done. I mean, they could have played it out that night and let Brett win clean and then have Brett lose either on a Raw, because they had several Raws. They had, three or four Raws before they got to the December pay-per-view?
Right.
Or Brett could have lost at the December pay-per-view. So, I mean, to me, Vince McMahon, WWF, they made that situation. And, looking back at it, Frank, I think they're the ones to blame in the whole situation.
Right. Well, that's the thing about it. WWF, made the mess. And then when it came time to clean the mess up, they didn't want to do it. And it's unfortunate because they easily, I mean, like you said, man, there was a multitude of different ways they could have taken the situation as far as diverted attention from the Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels match. They could have you could even have a situation where you could have even inserted another person into that match if you wanted to, to take the tension off. I mean, what would have happened if the match would have went on that night with Bret versus Shawn at Survivor Series, but then you would have brought out a third guy? And that third guy, it's kind of like what I'm thinking about is do you remember when Taz was going to the WWF in ECW? And they had that triple threat match, and Taz was the first one to get beat. He was the first one to get pinned.
Mm-hmm.
So at least we've done something like that where Brett gets pinned, but not by Shawn. Gets pinned by somebody else and drops the belt right there. I think the big shock would have been, Brett got pinned first. And all this other backstage stuff never would have happened, and then you continue on the pay-per-view, and Brett goes home. Because he could have done a lot of things. I mean, you could have even given The Undertaker the belt that night. You could have given Vader the belt that night. Although I think Vader had got taken out by Kane, I really don't remember that interview all that much. It's just everybody's clouded. All my stuff is clouded with Montreal. But
That's what it comes down to. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the Montreal screw job itself.
Yeah.
Exactly. Is what you remember about that pay-per-view.
Exactly. So I just remember Vader getting hit with a hammer or something by Kane. But like I said, it's a lot of things they could have done. They had plenty of time to do a lot of different things, and they chose not to do it. And then I believe it was the infamous Triple H said, F them. if he doesn't want to do business, we'll do business for him. And that's what started off.
I think, you know, looking back at the situation now, and had it been, the roles would have been reversed.
Right.
If Brett was staying and Sean was leaving, and you think back to the click, I could understand Vince being a little apprehensive as far as what if Shawn Michaels takes the championship belt to Nitro?
Yeah.
Because of those two, especially thinking of Shawn at that time and his, you know, his arrogant, immature behavior at that time versus Brett, who's a more traditional wrestler. You know, he was raised by wrestling family, wrestling tradition. Wrestling means everything to him.
Right.
Who was more likely to show up on Nitro with a championship belt? Shawn Michaels or Bret Hart?
Oh, man, you didn't even have to even ask that question. It's obvious. It would have been the guy who was the degenerates. You know, the guy who was back there and, you know, they're cross shopping and all this stuff they were doing behind the scenes that one day would make millions and millions of dollars. That guy, Shawn Michaels, would have been the guy that would have taken that belt and went over to WCW and either gave the belt over to Bischoff or done something stupid, because Shawn did not have the tradition of the business in his blood. Brett had the tradition of the business. Brett's, you know, family, Stampede Wrestling, they always had that relationship with the McMahon family from day one. So Brett would never do anything like that. Brett's relationship with Vince was a father-son type of relationship, and he would never do anything to screw that up. You know, and that's and obviously, you know, Shawn would have went up there, and I guarantee you Triple H would have probably fought him over. And he would have had a quick reunion right there in WCW.
And I think that's the whole bottom line, is that Vince panicked thinking, well, if Brett leaves Montreal as my champion, he could show up on Nitro. But I mean, and dump the belt in the trash can. But I mean, looking back at that situation, why would he come to that conclusion? Because, I mean, here was the guy, Frank, in summer of 96, your company is struggling. You're getting beat in the ratings.
Right.
Eric Bischoff calls, who's got the bank load, the wallet from billionaire Ted, and he's just spending money left and right. You already have Hogan. You already have Nash. You already have Hall. And here it is, summer of 96. And you have Savage. You have what, Piper. All those guys were in WCW at that time. So here's Ted, or I should say more specifically Eric. Here's Eric calling, saying, you know what, Brett, you've been loyal to Vince all these years, but you know what, the boat's sinking. Come here to us. We're going to start this NWO angle, and you can be a part of it. You know, we're giving this some, you know, the kind of the backbone of the success of NWO was it kind of looked like, you know, guys jumping from WWF taking over WCW. So here, all of a sudden, we could take you, a you know, prominent, big-time main eventer in WWF, bring you to WCW. And yet, Brett turns him down. And if you believe, you know, what he said, he basically takes one-third the pay. Because if you think about it, if he offered $9 million for 3 years, that's $3 million per.
Right.
He takes a 20-year deal, and yeah, it's 20 years, but he's only going to make $1 million per. He's taking one-third the money to stay with your company that's struggling, that's getting killed in the rating. Well, I shouldn't say getting killed, but beaten pretty soundly right now. The ship seems to be sinking. It looks like WCW is in the driver's seat of winning this war. And Brett stays. So Montreal comes. The guy who was super loyal to you all those years, turned down that money, wanted to stay, and you basically, you know, kicked him out of the company. And now you don't trust the guy? That's what the one of the most baffling things to me, this whole equation, is. Bret Hart was one of the most loyal employees you ever had in your company. Turned down a lot of money to stay put. Could have made a huge impact if he would have jumped to WCW in 96. But stays put. And here comes fall of 97. He's your champion. And now you suddenly you don't trust the guy?
Well, you know, the thing about it is you have to look at that. Why all of a sudden did Vince no longer trust Bret? And I think it all goes back to Bret initially talking with WCW. I think maybe Bret might have did this behind Vince's back. Or it could have been Shawn Michaels and Triple H getting in Vince's ear. But something happened there where he took a relationship, I believe, that lasted, what was it, 17 years or something like that? That Bret had been there. And all of a sudden now Vince doesn't trust. And then Vince is just, at the time, Vince is paranoid. Vince has, you got billionaire Ted breathing out his back, making all these deals, taking talents. You got the NWO angle going on. He's beating them. He's killing them in the ratings. You got all these different situations where, WWF can't afford to have the water coolers anymore in the Titan Tower. They're just getting hammered by WCW. So something happened there where Vince just said, I think it was his inner circle. At the time, I think it was, Cornette, Bruce Pritchard, and I believe Pat Patterson, and Briscoe, was his inner circle. Somebody got to him and said, we can't trust Bret. And the thing that I always wondered about that, like I just said, was that conversation that Bret had with Bischoff. I mean, did he let McMahon know that he had that conversation, or did Vince have to find it out from, say, Eric Bischoff?
Well, I mean, you could hardly blame the guy. I mean, when your contract is up and you're in this war, certainly you're going to listen to the other side. I mean, he couldn't have been – how could you expect a guy who was a big-time free agent not to at least listen to the other side?
Yeah, but it's like – I get that. But it's kind of like this. If you're so loyal to me, to the WWF brand, you didn't even have to even think about offering to WCW in the first place. So obviously I can't trust Bret Hart. Even though Bret made the decision, hey, he's going to stay with me, I can't trust him. There was only one person I can trust here, and that's Shawn. Because I know Shawn isn't going to go over to WCW because I got him ironclad. So he's not leaving. But Bret's the one. Bret wants to leave. Bret's all about the money.
But you're going to trust the guy. You're going to trust the guy who loses his smile?
Hey, he lost his smile, but you got to look back at the time. Though. It's like with Bret and Shawn, was Bret box office? Was Shawn box office? When Shawn got the strap, was Shawn box office? Probably not. No, because as soon as Shawn got that strap, Hall and Nash went over to WCW. And that's when things started to change. And the rest of the world would never be the same as we knew it. So I would just like to know at the time who got in McMahon's ear and said, we can't trust Bret Hart. And was this all, and is it a political game? Absolutely, it's a political game. It's politics and everything. Was there something there that scared McMahon, that gave McMahon schizophrenia, and he felt that he, can't trust Bret and trying to get rid of the Hitman? But then it's like also too, if you felt that way, then why did you sign a guy a 20-year deal?
And why'd you give him the belt in the summer of 97?
Right. Why'd you give him exactly? Why'd you give him a strap? There's a lot of stuff here that doesn't make any damn sense.
Yeah. My thought is okay, you give the title to Bret in SummerSlam 97. He beats Undertaker. He goes over, right?
Right.
So obviously, if you give him the belt, you must think you have something with Bret. Let's give him a run now.
Right.
He can help me with the ratings. He can help me in the box office. So I'm going to run with this guy. And then within a month or two, you decide, I don't know. Maybe I'll get rid of Bret. Bret, call Eric back. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Also, at the time, weren't they trying to do something at the time with Ahmed Johnson? As far as maybe making Ahmed the first black WWF champion, they were going to move into an Ahmed Johnson a feud with Johnson and I believe Michaels or something like that.
Well, again, at any time in September, October, he could have lost to anybody at that time.
Right. Right. So
but
I think
you made the. I mean, you made that bed.
Yeah.
And again, you make that call in middle of August to go back to Bret. And then within a short period of time, you decide, I don't want Bret. I mean, what, it just doesn't make any sense that you put the belt on him and then the guy's going to be leaving, or more specifically, you're going to force him out, because you have to foresee that if I'm going to force my champion out, there's going to come a time where I got to take the belt off him.
Right.
And I don't know if he envisioned, at that time, I don't know if he envisioned it, you know, it could have got this big in Montreal, but I mean, you know, we consider Vince a genius, and you think, where's the foresight to see that ahead? And I know people will say, well, he had the foresight to ultimately turn himself into Mr. McMahon and have the shiner on TV and say, well, Brett screwed Brett, which I think is probably most infamous lines in wrestling now, is Brett screwed Brett.
Yeah, but, you know, like you and I were talking about offline, here's the deal. All this stuff that happened after Montreal, that all could have been in play before the Montreal Screwjob even happened. Because if you remember going down in the summer of 97, I believe that's when Vince first took the Stone Cold Stunner from Stone Cold Steve Austin. So it was already, he was already transitioning into that character to begin with. They just fired up more after Montreal because everybody was pissed at Vince. So Vince had to do something. You know, Vince tried several different things to try to combat this NWO angle and combat WCW. You know, you have the Nation of Domination. You brought in Ron Simmons as Farooq Asad. Remember that? With the helmet?
Yep.
You brought him in there. You were going to push him to the moon as the next, you know, champion. You had, you brought in Mankind with Taker. At the time, you had the Ringmaster. Stone, you know, the Ringmaster, Steve Austin, with Ted DiBiase. So you had a lot of stuff going on in 96 and 97. And then, you know, subsequently didn't give Hall of Nash what they wanted. They went down south to WCW. Now, who's to say that the reason why, and think about this for a second. Who's to say the reason why Hulk Hogan was, you know, they brought this idea to turn Hogan heel at Bash at the Beach in 96. Who's to say that this entire time Bischoff wasn't talking to Bret Hart about that exact spot? What if Bischoff was trying to get Bret to come over? This is the reason why they didn't know who the third guy was going to be, because the third guy could end up being Bret Hart.
Yeah, because we're talking July
yep.
of 96, and I think Bret says that he actually re-signs with Vince in September of 96.
Right.
So you'd think during that summer there had to have been dialogue between the two sides.
Oh, absolutely. And I definitely believe that if it wasn't, because everything that I know about the NWO angle at this time period, and this is during the contract negotiations with Bret Hart, is that they were going to either put Sting in that position, or it had to be somebody from the other side. It had to be somebody from either WCW side, or it had to be some outsider. Bret Hart would have been a perfect guy to come over there to join Hall and Nash. Now, look, what would have happened? What would have happened if Bret Hart had came out there at Bash at the Beach in the pink and black or whatever, and went out there and he attacked Savage and put the sharpshooter on Macho Man, or put the sharpshooter on Sting? And whoa! So Brett leaves WWF to go WCW. But that right there it sounds good. It sounds tasty. It sounds, you know, tempting. But the problem with that is you go all the way back to '93 when a match that was supposed to happen didn't happen. And I think you know what I'm talking about. It was mm-hmm. supposed to be the main event of SummerSlam '93, Hogan versus Bret Hart. Oh, Bret Hart, you know, loses the WWF Championship at WrestleMania 9. Hogan wins it back, what, 2 minutes later by dropping Yokozuna? Bret Hart doesn't get the belt back until WrestleMania, I believe it was, WrestleMania 10. And Hogan leaves the company and never has that match with Bret Hart. I mean, from what we understand, there have been promotional stuff. I guess there's stuff out in Connecticut right now. Promotional materials that have Bret Hart versus Hulk Hogan for SummerSlam, 93. That we're going to have in Detroit. That never happened because Hogan said, I don't want to work with Hart because Hart's too small. That could have very well been the reason why Bret says, you know what? Screw Turner, screw Hogan. I'm not going to go down there, like you were saying offline, I'm not going to go down there and deal with all the politics down there at WCW like you said, he probably heard about all the crap that was going on down there in the first place. It sounds too good to be true. You know, something's going to happen. So the guy stays with the WWF. And the loyalty is what ends up kicking Brett in the ass. That's just my opinion.
I think it's commendable. The guy stays. I mean, the guy turned down a lot of money. Would have been easy for him to jump ship, take the money. Probably would have worked a lot less house shows. Would have probably been home more often. You know, probably could have been more healthier. You know, would have worked a lot less dates. I mean, the one thing that I always would think of WCW, you know, at that time, 96, 97, I mean, a lot of the guys you saw on television were not working the house shows. You know, a lot of times they had the mid-card guys working the house shows. So,
very
I mean, Brett could have gotten a lot, would have worked a lot less dates lately. Like, you know, probably would have worked most of the TVs and the Nitros and Thunders along with the pay-per-views. But I think a lot of the house shows he would have been home for. And, you know, it would have been an easier schedule on him physically. And, you know, it's kind of interesting when you think about it. You know, what would have happened if Brett would have jumped at that time? We never got the Montreal screw job.
Yep.
The one thing I kind of wonder about would be, I mean, Steve Austin was going to be a huge star anyway.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
What certainly helped him was WrestleMania 97.
Yeah, but here's the deal with that. Okay, say that you had Brett was already, let's say in 97 when this happened, March 97, Brett was already at WCW. Okay, let's just say Brett was part of NWO. He was a third guy. You're saying basically who do we put with Steve Austin to get Austin over to that point? All right.
WrestleMania 97, right.
Right. You put over who's the next big guy in the line? Austin has to get in the ring with somebody to prove himself that he can go to that next level. Okay. What about at the time, what if Triple H had been up to par on that level? What if Triple H was the Triple H that we would see in 2000, 1999? What if it was that Triple H? And he's testing them. He's getting them ready because at WrestleMania 14, Austin's going to wrestle Michaels for the belt. What about that?
True. I mean, yeah, it could have went that way for sure. I'm just thinking the ramifications that, you know, at that time period. Yeah, I think Brett would have made a huge impact in WCW in 96. And
oh,
that could have really been a huge blow to Vince at that time.
Right.
I mean, Vince would have been blindsided. I don't think Vince was oblivious to Brett's conversation with Turner. I think he knew about it. I mean, hey, it was on the documentary. I mean, he's sitting in that pool thinking, you know, they've offered me a lot of money. And I'm 40 years old. I'm towards the end of my career. Yeah, I could jump right now, and it's maybe the best thing for my family, but I'm loyal to Vince. And, you know, the ramifications would have been that I think WCW would have really took a huge boost. I mean, they already were hot with 96 in that angle. And, you know, it would have been interesting to see the aftermath. We see the aftermath, you know, in November of 97, but what would have been the aftermath, say, in summer of 96?
Oh,
you know, Vince.
Yeah. Yeah, they would have. I mean, and I'm thinking about it right now too. Check this out. The main event of Starrcade '97 would have been completely different. Okay, what if Brett had been the third guy with the NWO angle, and you had Hogan there, and Hogan remained the babyface, red and yellow Hulkamania? You could have built two Hogan versus Bret Hart at Starrcade '97.
Absolutely.
You could have
For
built
sure.
to that. Yeah. You could have built to that match. But then if you think about it, okay, if you built to that match, hell, what would have happened with Sting? You know what I'm saying? What do you do with Sting at that point? So
well,
the
question would have been, and I don't know what Hogan's contract was, but could have Hogan nixed that idea even at that time?
He could have nixed it. I mean, Kevin Nash has said so many times when Nash was a quote-unquote booker of WCW. Nash would say he had so many good ideas of something he wanted Hogan to do, and Hogan would come in and just kibosh everything because Hogan has so much stroke.
And I think that's one of the big lying factors of, I mean, you know, when you talk to the boys, the boys know what's going on. I'm sure there's people he talked to in WCW that told him what was going on with WCW, and he said, you know what? I just don't like that situation right now. And I want to stay with Vince. There's a lot of unfinished business for me here in WWF, and I want to stay here. So I think from that standpoint, it's commendable. But it's interesting to see what the ramifications would have been, and specifically with Shawn in 97, The Undertaker in 97, you know, Steve Austin in 97.
Yeah, you got a situation here like this, too. You got, I mean, you're saying what would the ramifications have been in 97. But look at the upswing here of what was going on at the time. You got Austin there. You got Taker there. Taker was already starting that feud. If I remember, he was already going to be feuding with Kane later that year. So, you know, Kane was going to make his debut in the fall, right? 97, that was at the Bad Blood.
Tore the cage door down.
Right. So he was already going to come in. You had Vader there. So you could have easily remade Vader into the monster he was in the WCW. And he could have been feuding with somebody. You had Sid Vicious there. You know, you could have easily had Sid work with Shawn a little bit more, or Sid versus Austin. You had a lot of different people here you could have been, you know, building up. Yeah, I mean, you had the British Bulldog still there. You had a lot of different guys. Owen Hart could have went to that next level. You know, there's so many different talents there that you could have worked with. You just had signed, Rocky Maivia. You know, you have that guy there. You had Hunter Hearst Helmsley still there. So there's a lot of different ways you could have, people could have found a way to work with. Because they were doing the match between Triple H and The Rock way before it would become box office. But they were testing the waters back in 96 and 97 with that. And think about this too. You had Goldust there. You had Mark Merrill there. You know, I believe at the time, yesterday, you had Mr. Perfect. I think Perfect was, you know, I think he was coming out of retirement or something. I think his Lloyd's of London deal was about to be up. So he was about to come out. So you had a lot of different ways you could go with stuff.
And, of course, talking about the aftermath now, we've talked about, you know, what could have been.
Yeah.
You know, going forward, after November of 97, you know, thing that always comes to my mind, you know, specifically is what happened with the British Bulldog, what happened with Jim Neidhart, what happened with Owen, because, you know, they were furious what happened with Vince, and they wanted out of their deals.
Yeah.
And who could blame them? And what happened was they released Neidhart. He was allowed to leave. British Bulldog, they gave him a lot of flack. They said, okay, you can get out of your deal, but it's going to cost you, what, was $150,000, I believe, at that time?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of zeros.
Yeah.
And, you know, he took it. He said, okay, I'm out of here. I can't work here. And I don't know. I always think, you know, the honorable thing would have been, you know, you screwed his brother-in-law. He doesn't want to work for you anymore. Is let the guy go. But I understand, you know, people say, well, for business, it was better that he hold on to these guys. Well, you know, if they don't want to work for you, you just screwed their family.
Yeah.
That's a tough situation. It's a very tough situation with the locker room.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the big one, of course, was Owen. Owen wanted out of his deal. And it was a long period, I remember, where Owen was off television.
It's funny you mention that right now, because I was just watching, courtesy of the WWF Network, I was watching D-Generation X in your house. Saw the main event, Shawn Michaels versus Ken Shamrock for the WWF Championship. Who comes out at the end? Owen Hart. This is when he started the Black Hart deal. And man, they could have made money with that. I really love that incarnation of Owen Hart. He came back. He just looked the part coming through the crowd. Just had this real, you know, just ass kicker attitude that we have never seen from Owen before. And they could have went a long ways with that. And I think him and Shawn, you know, they had some pretty good matches. They didn't even touch yet what they could have done. And then he was quickly put, you know, on the sideline in feuding with Triple H over, I believe it was the European Championship or something like that.
And then, of course, he was the tag team with Jarrett.
I think that was probably his. Besides being, you know, the guy did it all except be world champion. And I think he could have been world champion. I really do.
Absolutely.
I'm not just saying that because the guy is deceased or anything like that. I'm just telling the truth. The guy was a hell of a worker. He was a hell of a hand. He was a hell of a heel. Owen Hart made you hate him. You know, he could do that. And that's a very, you know, it might be easy for some, but the guy had it all. And I think the time to put the belt on him would have been that time after my show. When Owen Hart came back to TV and he had to deal with Michaels and DX when they were starting that up, he could have been WWE champion, and he would have been a damn good one, and that would have been like that would have been a huge deal, and they never went there. But I think the team he had with Jeff Jarrett, I think that was cool. I thought they were pretty good as a tag team. And the guy was a king of the ring and Slammy Award winner and all that stuff. I mean, this is when you were proud to have a Slammy Award. Because it was a big deal. But unfortunately, though, for the rest of the Hart Foundation at the time, Pillman had passed on. And Bulldog and Neidhart, they followed Brett. I mean, once again, we all go back to loyalty. They were loyal to Brett. But damn, man, it's like loyalty doesn't get you anywhere. Because look what happened to them when they went down to Turner. They did nothing. You could have brought the Hart Foundation in with Brett, the Bulldog, and Neidhart. You could have brought them in as a whole separate other group to combat the NWO. And they didn't do that.
I think the missed opportunities on both ends. I mean, we can talk about what happened with Brett once he got to WCW.
Yeah.
And I my first thought to him in WCW was he's basically feuding over the U.S. title when
right.
he just had the WWF. I mean, basically didn't lose the WWF championship. Everybody knew he got screwed, and here he is. He's feuding for the United States championship. I mean, no disrespect to the United States championship, but the guy was a WWF champion, never lost. That should have been the storyline is I'm the undisputed champion.
Yeah.
You don't have to say WWF. I'm the undisputed champion. I'm here to take your I'm here to win the WCW championship, which
yeah.
is
there you
I
go.
Mean, that's the bottom line with wrestling is the guy should always want the championships.
There you go.
And okay, he's going to feud for their secondary championship.
He could have shown up on TV at WCW and said just like you did right now. I'm Bret the Hitman Hart, and I am the world champion that never lost the belt.
Right.
So despite popular belief, I never tapped out to Shawn Michaels. I was screwed for Shawn Michaels.
And I'm here
because I want to be, like you said, I want to be the WCW champion. So I'm challenging you, Hulk Hogan. But hey, Hogan didn't want that to happen. Hogan says, oh, brother, little brother, Brett, we got the U.S. title for you, brother. We got the TV title for you. You're not going to get the ring with Hollywood.
And then, too, I'm thinking, you remember the storyline they did with, as I said before, Vince is in the studio, and he's got the shiner, and he's talking about, Brett screwed Brett. I mean,
right.
they could have done a series of interviews with Brett going back to that situation. I mean, it was the hottest discussion in wrestling. And here we are in, say – end of 97, he shows up, end of 97, he shows up in WCW. Have a sit-down interview with him and say, you know what? I never lost a championship. They screwed me out of the championship. As far as I'm concerned, Vince screwed Vince. And I'm here to take the WCW championship. They showed me, they disrespected me. They disrespected my family. And now I'm here to take the championship. Not to come in and feud over the United States Championship. They didn't mean that time.
Well, wait a minute. See, you're stepping ahead of yourself there, pal. When he first came into WCW, he didn't even go for the U.S. Championship. You remember, the first match that Brett ever did was against Ric Flair as Sold Out 98 before he even got there. And before that, I guess Brett was going to be the babyface that he was in the WWF. I mean, he had the glasses and all that stuff. And then somehow the plans changed, and he was full-fledged heel. And no, like you said, no knock against the U.S. strap because, hey, he was feuding with the U.S. belt with DDP. And DDP at the time was hot.
Right.
And they had some pretty damn good matches. And Brett did some matches there with Macho Man. They wrestled at, what was it, Slammery 98? Yeah, Slammery 98. And so that's where McMahon was supposed to wrestle Eric Bischoff. So they had he had a few with DDP, but like you said, man, if you're going to be the U.S. champion, okay, the knowledge that I have in the wrestling business is that your secondary championship makes you the number one contender for the world championship. So at some point in time, if Hogan had that belt or Sting had the belt, whoever, Bret Hart being the U.S. champion was the number one contender.
But still, I mean, the guy had never lost a WWF championship.
Yeah.
So build that up. And going back to the Bulldog and Owen, I just think of the missed opportunities, really, of both companies.
Yeah.
You know, they had the Bulldog. They could have done something with the Bulldog. They could have done something with Neidhart. As you said, they could have built them up as a new faction. Maybe some different Canadians could have been part of that group. They could have a different Hart Foundation group.
Jericho, Benoit, and Mike.
Exactly. I mean, they had those type of characters there at their disposal, and they didn't do anything with them. And then going back to Owen, as I said, remember, he was off television for a long time, and he came back, and I thought they were going to push this guy to the moon.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking 98 now. Brett's gone. I mean, they played up Montreal as huge as they possibly milked it as best they could. You know, Brett screwed Brett. And now here's Owen. He's still part of the company. You know, the Bulldog's gone. Neidhart's gone. Pillman passed away. I'm the surviving Hart member.
Yep.
And I'm here. And you know what? I'm going to take Sean out. Or I'm going to take out Triple H, Hunter.
Yep.
I'm going to take out Austin. Of course, I guess it was heat with Austin and Owen at that time because of what happened at the SummerSlam. But still, I mean, The Rock's getting built up. I'm going to take out The Rock. And they just totally missed the ball. I mean, I agree, you know, Jarrett and Owen Hart was a good tag team. But why were they in a tag team? I mean, the guy should have been – this was his opportunity to be the singles guy now. A lot of people thought he was going to follow in Brett's footsteps and be the main guy. The guy had the look. He had good verbal skills, great wrestler, and, you know, Brett's gone. This was his opportunity, and I look back at that period, and I just scratched my head at what they did. And then, of course, ultimately, they hit him back as the Blue Blazer because, you know, there was the story that they wanted Owen to play up that he's what with Deborah, and he said, no, I'm a family man. I don't want my family to see that I'm, you know, with this other woman. And so, you know what? If you don't want to do, you don't want to play with our ball, we're going to give you Blue Blazer back. And you're going to come from the rafters. And it's just amazing to me, Frank, when I think back at how they just totally missed the opportunity with Owen. Owen was one footstep away from being a huge star in WWF. And I'd say he is. I mean, he won about everything he could possibly win.
Yep.
And when I think of a slammy, I think of Owen Hart carrying the slammies around when they meant something.
Yeah,
I mean, he made it special when he carried his slammies around with his championship belt, his tag team belt, Intercontinental champion, whatever title he had at that time.
Yep.
I mean, and then here he comes in 98. Brett's in the other company. I'm back. I wanted to leave. I requested my release. They didn't give it to me, so I'm reluctantly here. Okay, do something with me. And no, we're not, you know, we're going to come up with a secondary program for you. We're going to put you in a tag team. And then ultimately, you're going to get dissatisfied with this tag team and didn't want to do the love storyline with Deborah. So you're the Blue Blazer. And then I think of, you know, well, what would have happened if he would have got released? What happened if Owen Hart would have showed? I mean, you go back to what if they could have done a group in WCW with Bulldog and Neidhart? And what if Owen would have showed up?
Well,
they could have probably had a faction to feud with the NWO.
Well, here's the deal. If Brett had already been there with the Hart Foundation faction in WCW with, you know, a Jericho or a Benoit or whatever, and you would have said, okay, well, I got a surprise coming, and the newest member is going to be Owen Hart. Here's where things get tricky, because I would have put Owen Hart in the NWO. I would have had him part of the NWO and had him feuding with Brett again.
You could have done that.
That's what
there's a lot of things you could have done.
Yeah, that's what I would have done if they hadn't been, because it would have been a bigger shock. Because you think, oh crap, here comes Brett's little brother Owen. But Owen has his own agenda. Owen is going to be, he's going to side with Hogan in the NWO. And Owen would have been a black and white NWO member. I would have done if I were booking.
Then again, that might have been far fetched because people knew the hate between Hart and Hogan, and for Owen to side with Hogan.
Hey, look at what happened.
After Vince screwed his brother, I don't know. I think I probably would have kept him with Brett, but
yeah. But this is wrestling, because look at the deal, though. I mean, Kevin Nash said on the NWO roundtable, he says that, you know, when they split the two factions, the Wolf Pack and the Black and White, he says it would have been a natural for Hall to come with me, but no. Hogan put a kibosh on that because he wasn't a cool guy in his faction. He said it made no sense. Because why would Hall side with Hogan when Hall came over with me? Same thing.
Oh, the headaches of WCW. I mean, looking right back at that time, I mean, it's no wonder they went under. I mean,
well, let's be honest about why they went under. Yeah, they went under because when one entity doesn't want professional wrestling on the network, it's not going to be there for much longer. I mean, WCW had its time, but if WCW had to continue to turn a profit, had to continue to, you know, bend in the black instead of bend in the red, I seriously doubt they would have canceled WCW program after AOL. But, you know, that Jamie Kellner had it in his mind, you know, something. I'm going to come in and make a big statement. I don't want wrestling on the Turner networks anymore. So screw them. But you think about all the mistakes that Bischoff made there, listening to Hogan and everybody else. It just sucks. Because you have so many wasted, you have so much wasted potential there of everything that could have been. You know, this company probably will still be around today.
But on the flip side, Frank, Vince bought WCW, and now all the tapes are available on WWE Network.
That's right. All the videos are available on the WWE Network, and they're dubbed.
The videos are there. Unfortunately, the music has lost their ways.
Yeah, the music lost its way, and that really, you know, irritates me, because I'm a big, huge person on, you know, originality and keeping it the way it was, because that's what we pay our $10 for every single month. So I'm not too happy with that aspect of the network. But you know what? Eventually, I think they'll fix that, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, they finally did. See, they finally gave Brett the ball. They finally gave Brett the ball, and they gave him the world championship, and it happened at Mayhem, 1999. When Brett finally got the belt, and I believe Brett won the belt, I believe, in Canada. I think it might have been either Toronto or it might have been Montreal. I think it was Toronto, where he finally got the WCW championship. He won the tournament to crown the new champion after, I believe, Sting had been stripped of the championship. So, hey, he finally, at some point, he finally got it.
I think in the final analysis, as we come to a conclusion here, and we talked a lot about the whole story, the backstory with Montreal, I think the bottom line, to quote another wrestler, when I think about it, is that Brett versus Shawn is probably one of the best rivalries we've ever seen in wrestling, although, you know, Vince would call it sports entertainment. And I just wonder what you think as far as, you know, I think Brett versus Shawn, I think great matches, great heat, great storylines. I think of all the, you know, the sunny days they came up with. And I mean, I think a lot, to a certain degree, they were shooting on each other out there, and it got real personal at times. But I think in the annals of, I'm going to say wrestling, I'm not going to say sports entertainment, because I'm a pro wrestling fan. But when you sum it up, you know, where does Brett versus Shawn rank? Because I'm thinking, you know, I think Dusty Rhodes versus Ric Flair. In fact, I was watching some old Starcades and think about, you know, what a great program that was. Even, you know, Flair versus Sting, or Flair versus Harley Race, Stone Cold Steve Austin against The Rock.
Yeah.
I mean, a great feud, great program that would be. Some would say Hogan Savage, or Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior. But I guess, you know, when you think of the great feuds, the great rivalries we've seen in wrestling, where do you think Brett versus Shawn really ranks in the annals of pro wrestling?
I think Brett and Shawn ranks as number one, simply because of the realism that was behind this feud. These other feuds, I mean, you probably, if you want to go the second, it would go by what you just said there, Hogan Savage. Because these were real life personal issues that these four individuals had with each other to make those rivalries work. And the fact that it's 2014, and we're sitting here on this podcast discussing the Montreal Screwjob after already 97. And we went through all that. It shows just how enriched in sports entertainment or pro wrestling this feud is. So with me, it ranks number one. It is simply ranks number one because of the drama. It ranks number one because of the action, because both these guys can go in there it put on a pretty damn good match. It would come out 5 stars. So it ranks number one with me. It is probably will go down in history besides maybe Savage Hogan, Austin McMahon, as the greatest rivalry ever in wrestling.
It's hard for me to argue. You know, when I think of great programs, great feuds, great matches, I mean, they're right up there. And I think it's really a credit to Brett, going back to the conversation he had with his brother after WrestleMania 12, you know, really playing up. They had legitimate heat, even though they, at the time, they were pretty much on good talking terms. And Brett embellished that. That was the old psychology. I'm sure you learned a little psychology from Stu Hart and the Hart family there. Hey, let's play this up. Everybody thinks we hate each other. That's great. We can cash in on that.
Yep.
And they certainly did. I mean, that was one of the best programs in the history of professional wrestling. And I think it's a credit to both of them. I mean, they really pulled it off. It really came off that, you know, at that time, looking back on it, they really hated each other. And it was just a natural feud. I mean, they both were smaller guys. You know, we talked about it in the documentary, you know, smaller guys in a company of monsters. You were talking about Sid and Vader and Farouk. I mean, he was a big guy. I'm thinking all these big monsters they had in WWF at that time. And here, I mean, Hulk Hogan, I mean, he's the ultimate big guy they had.
Right.
Yokozuna. And here's a time where they were willing to give their championship belts to Brett, a smaller guy, and Shawn Michaels, a smaller guy. Both had paid their dues. Both were WWF tag team champions. Both had big, you know, won intercontinental championships. I mean, think of as you're going back to the U.S. championship, talking about, you know, secondary championship, you pay your due. You start off, you know, winning the tag titles. Then you go singles.
Yep.
And you get the intercontinental championship or the United States championship at WCW. And you build up, I mean, that's when the title meant something. You were precursor. And then you made it there. And these two guys at that time, you know, thinking back to the, you know, mid-90s, you know, Vince had always been partial to big guys. And for these two guys to rise to the top, I mean, they had Hall and Nash were champions. And then they left. So a credit to both of those guys that they paid their dues, had a great feud, and a credit that, you know, Vince had the smarts to put the titles on the two smaller guys in the company at that time.
Yep. Definitely agree with that. It really changes the landscape of the business, even to this day, that a smaller guy can be the champion. I mean, they gave the belt to Guerrero. They gave the belt to Benoit. They gave the belt to Jericho. They gave the belt to, you know, just, you know, it really just changed the dichotomy of the business. The landscape has changed forever. From 96 to now, everything was changed.
Absolutely, and I appreciate this conversation because I know Frank and I have been talking about doing a podcast like this. It was kind of refreshing to take a break from the current topics because I think, as I said up on the beginning of this podcast, we've been really hammering WWE Network. We've been hammering CM Punk. We've been hammering Sting. Obviously, it's WrestleMania time. We'll talk about WrestleMania more as it gets closer. We know the card a little bit better. I know, Frank, we're going to go back to that WWE Network topic at some point because, you know, we both, I mean, this footage we're talking about with Brett and Owen and Sting, and you go back and watch some of the older footage, things have been dubbed, the music have been dubbed out, you know, NWO music has been dubbed in certain spots. So we're going to go back to those topics, but it was nice, refreshing to tackle a topic that we both are very passionate about. Obviously, this was really the precursor to the Monday Night Wars really culminating. And then, of course, was it April of 98, WWF finally caught up to WCW. It beat Nitro in the ratings. And then, of course, you know, Vince went on to ultimately win the Monday Night War. So, but I think it was refreshing to, you know, get away from the current topics. Because, Frank, I think back to one of the things that kind of got us to walk away from the hotlines was just the day-to-day talking about wrestling. And I think there's a lot of days, a lot of weeks even, and there's not a lot of news that's really noteworthy. You know, we try to tackle the current topics, try to give you our perspective on the news. But, I mean, there's so many other topics that we can get into. And I think it was refreshing to get away from the news and talk about something that we both are I think we both are very passionate about this time period and these two individuals that we talked about tonight.
Yeah, and everything, like you just said, but it was a precursor to everything that came after, including the, you know, I mean, people would say that when WCW got Bret, it was a final nail in the coffin of the WWF. And in reality, it actually wasn't. It actually
right.
wasn't. It actually did the opposite. Because when Bret came over to WCW, it wasn't a big deal anymore. Because the guy had been on TV for so long after Montreal, he had been on TV for what was like, you know, probably damn near a month.
Right.
So it wasn't that big of a deal anymore. When he finally did show up and they put on immediately, what's Bret Hart's first deal going to be at WCW? Oh, he's going to referee the Zbyszko, you know, Bischoff match at Starrcade. That's what you got for a guy who's a former world WWF champion who never lost the strap. Like you said, man, if you can go back in time, here's what you would do with Bret. You bring Bret in, and Bret can't wrestle. He can't do anything. Well, hey, listen, why not do some interviews with the guy, have these sit-downs, have a Mike Tenay or somebody in there, or Tony Schiavone, sit down with Bret Hart, tell the real story of Montreal. You know, do that. Show some of that, show some of that footage from Wrestling with Shadows or something. You could have easily done the whole deal. But no, it had to be about Hogan. It had to be about you know, what was going on at the time with the NWO. At this point in time, in around 98, hey, man, NWO was starting to fizzle out. It was already watered down at this point. So, and then after that, you remember Bret became Hogan's sidekick there for a little while, his lackey. And it was all about, let's keep Bret on my side, let's keep Bret doing what I wanted to do, so I don't have to get in the ring with him. I think the reason why Hogan never wanted to wrestle Bret Hart is because he knew Bret Hart would probably get there and shoot on him.
I think you made a good point, because I remember that time period, people saying, wow, you know, Bret, you know, Vince is going to let Bret go, and, you know, what this would mean to WCW to get Bret.
Yep.
And, wow. I mean, sometimes it's addition by subtraction. And probably at that time, you know, Bret had kind of lost his spot. Certainly Stone Cold was on the verge of being a huge star. He had The Rock. So he had players, as you said before, we talked about the roster. He had people in place to take over.
Right.
And I think he went about it all the wrong ways, but he probably made the best business decision he could for himself. The money he saved and to build up new talent and
yep.
to go in new directions, fresh matches that we haven't seen before. A lot of times in WCW, they went back to the same things.
Yeah.
And, you know, a credit to Vince. I mean, I did bash Vince a lot in this podcast, you know, for the way he handled the Bret situation. And I think if you had a genuine sit-down interview with Vince now, I think maybe he'd maybe admit that, okay, I made the right decision, but I probably went about it the wrong way. I think he might be able to at least admit that now here in 2014.
Yeah. Well, Vince,
I hope he would.
Vince would have admitted it back in 2003 or 4, whatever it was, because here's the deal. Bret Hart had the stroke, and who was the first person to call Bret in the hospital? It was Vince McMahon. So,
the minute he got his phone hooked up, he said, even.
Yep.
So,
and the phone, and as soon as he got it hooked up, the phone was ringing. It was on the phone. It was Vince McMahon. Why would a guy who said, you screwed you, and he has no sympathy at all for Bret, and forget Bret, and you know, whatever, and hey, Vince knew he was wrong about the way he did the business. Maybe the act of how he did it was wrong. But, you know, he knew as a humanitarian. And everybody thinks that Vince is just this prick. I don't believe that. You know, I think it's all, Vince is a prick for business, because you have to be a prick. But as far as a humanitarian guy, hey, the guy called Bret Hart. As soon as Bret's phone was hooked up, the guy was calling. You know, he was that concerned. Because Bret was like a son of Vince. So,
and, of course, there was that whole lawsuit, too, over Owen Hart as well.
Right.
The Hart family was basically suing Vince for a wrongful death suit. So that
right.
was certainly heat between the families for that, too.
Exactly. But Vince knew that heat was, I mean, that heat was warranted. Because of what happened with Owen. And Owen, even as the Blue Blazer, he got that over.
Yeah.
If you remember back during that time, he got that blue, when that Blue Blazer music would hit, people would pop. You know, it was an angle going on at the time of who was the real Blue Blazer. And one night it was Owen out there, and another guy was playing the Blue Blazer. So it was fun times. It was sad that he got to you know, he got put back in that gimmick, but it was good times. Just wish they never would get the stunt that they did with him to the Raptors. That was stupid, but you know.
Yeah, that's always a sore spot. You know, going back to that time period is. That's another topic I'm sure we could get into at some point.
Absolutely.
It's always that one of those old arguments, you know, should have the show continued? Should it have been a refund? I know I just, you know, thinking back to that pay-per-view as we wrap up here is I just didn't care about the pay-per-view after, you know, Jim Ross comes on and says at 9:30 that he's gone. I mean, what does the pay-per-view mean at that point? It's meaningless, and I couldn't really tell you. I just remember Austin and Undertaker in the main event in some capacity, but I can't really tell you what the match was, and I really didn't care. And,
yep.
But I mean, if that's a topic people would want us to get into, you know, I know talking to Frank offline, we've had some ideas for other topics. You know, we can take breaks from, you know, talking about the current news cycles and get into, you know, topics that we're passionate about. And,
exactly.
You know, we're just two passionate wrestling fans that, unfortunately, I think over the last, I don't know how many years, Frank, it's been more sports entertainment and,
right,
and less on the wrestling side. And I think I think that's kind of the underlying thing, is that we really miss the professional wrestling. I'm not saying, you know, some aspects about today's product is not good. And there's certain things that are, and there's certain things, characters that I do like in today's wrestling. I'm not saying that, you know, today's wrestling is total garbage.
Right.
It just doesn't pique my interest as much as it used to. And I just think of, you know, this time frame. I know it's a special time because it was the Monday Night Wars and there was two companies that were competing. And I guess that's kind of the sad thing when I think about today's product is, you know, what if TNA could have been any sort of resemblance to competition? And to me, I mean, TNA's had their opportunities to do something and they just totally missed the ball. And you know, you always could do what if. I mean, we talked about what if Owen would have gotten out of his contract. What if Brett would have jumped to WCW in 96? I mean, we've talked about these different scenarios. I mean, what if would have been the roles would have been reversed and Brett and Sean was leaving? You know, could Vince trusted Sean? I mean, you talked about it before with throwing the championship belt in the trash can. So a lot of, you know, what ifs. And I just think of, and I guess that's probably the underlying thing, too, is WWF versus WCW. What made it so great was the competition. And just over the years, you know, once Vince bought ECW and once he gobbled up WCW, that there really has not been competition events. And Vince may say he knows what you want better than what you know what you want. But, you know, I look at the attendance figures. I look at pay-per-view numbers.
Yep.
I look at the ratings, and to me, I just think maybe Vince doesn't know exactly what the fans want. And I think, too, you know, kind of concluding with what happened with WCW, you know, the WCW fan base is gone.
Yep.
And they thought, you know, once they bought WCW, that the WCW fans would just say, okay, Vince won, we're going to watch WCW. But that WCW fan base, to a larger degree, disappeared.
Yep.
And, I mean, today, you know, I think if they get a 3.1, it's people say, well, that's a good rating. And it is in terms of the USA Network, and it keeps USA Network number one. But, I mean, I think at times when, you know, Raw would get a 5.5 or a 6.0.
Yep. Yep.
Or the two companies together would have, what, 11-point rating.
Exactly. You know,
or a 12-point rating.
Yeah. A 3-point rating is nothing. You aren't doing the numbers. A lot of people don't realize this. They're doing the numbers that WCW was doing before they shut down.
Yeah, I mean, Thunder would get like a 2.5, wouldn't it? 2.7?
Right. Yeah, doing SmackDown numbers.
Yeah. And that was a bad number at that time.
Right. So, I mean, these numbers are nothing to be proud of. You killed off a good sector of the fan base. The ECW fans are gone, too.
I just think back to, I said this before, a different podcast, when the three companies were there, ECW too, you know, when they run a pay-per-view, it was like you could easily find a friend to split the cost with you, or get three guys and get a house full of people over watching the pay. I can't get anybody to watch a WWE pay-per-view. I can't get anybody to get TNA. I mean, we're doing this during the TNA lockdown pay-per-view. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers here on my – nobody cares. And I know those people say, oh, I'm a TNA fan. I love it. That's great. But look at the numbers. They're just not there.
Yep.
And it's just – it's like a missed opportunity. I mean, when we had the hotline back in 2004, 2005, TNA had so many great opportunities. We talked about it before with Samoa Joe and Angle. Yeah, the Divas were hot. The X Division was hot. And then I'm thinking 2014, and all I see is Dixie Carter.
Yep.
It's a shame. And you know, I know there's a large wrestling fan base out there that's – and I think this is where the WWE Network comes in. I think they're saying, hey, you miss ECW, you miss WCW, you miss World Class, you miss AWA, boom, buy our network, which is great.
Yep.
And that's great for the, you know, fan base that say, oh, I love to see Uncensored 99, and then go find it. Or you can find the Bunkhouse Bashes or Bash at the Beach, some of those old pay-per-views. But I don't know, Frank. I just think today so many missed opportunities with TNA and that we could be really talking. I know Jeff Jarrett was talking about this wrestling boom, and he thinks it's going to be his company. But we sure need another wrestling boom. We need some competition events, not only for the fans, but the wrestlers as well.
You know, if Jeff Jarrett can pull it off, more power to him. I mean, he had something there with the TNA brand, but he lost money and lost control, and that's what it was. I think that's why he said that. That's why he, on that promo he had the song "Won't Get Fooled Again," because
let's hope not.
Yeah. So I mean, if he's serious, hey, you know what? It can't be a bad thing to have more of an alternative. So I'm all for it. I just want to see what he has what he can pull off. I mean, I thought when he pulled off in Nashville when it first happened with NWA TNA, I thought it was a good thing. Those old Wednesday night pay-per-views, those were classics, man. And I really enjoyed that stuff. You know? But hey, I look at where it was then and looking at it now, it's just a piece of crap now.
It was so weird. I went back and watched all those old pay-per-views, and I'm thinking, might as well just show the TNA pay-per-view right out of the WWE Network because it seems like it's going to be there at some point.
Yep.
And that's sad. I mean, boy, TNA, I just think TNA's missed so many opportunities. I guess it kind of underlines, too, with missed opportunities with Vince McMahon and Owen Hart and the Bulldog and WCW with the Bulldog and Owen Hart. And boy, you go back and revisit history and just so many missed opportunities. That, I mean, even today we could be talking about totally different topics than what we're currently talking about. But I guess anyways, Frank, it was refreshing to talk about, again, a topic that we're both very passionate about. We want to know what you think, too. Brett versus Owen. Or I should say Brett versus Sean. That's another good one. Brett versus Owen. Another great feud. Great feud.
There was psychology there because they didn't seem to ride together.
I mean, what a great – I mean, I didn't even think about that when I was talking about the great feuds of the past. But, yeah, Brett versus Owen. Another great one. But specifically, you know, Brett versus Sean, where does it rank in the annals of pro wrestling? Thoughts on Montreal Screwjob? We, you know, kind of gave our thoughts. Conspiracy theories have popped up all around. You know, some people believe it was a total work. Even today, some people think it's a total work. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you thought of our theories and what you thought of our opinions about if Brett would have showed up in WCW in 96 and you know, what if Owen would have showed up in WCW in 98?
Yep.
Or what could have Vince done with Owen Hart in 1998 after the screw job? And so many different scenarios. So as always, Frank, it was great to talk to you. Glad we got a chance to talk about something other than the current topics, and I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this as well. This was like a serious recharge with the batteries. So absolutely, very, very good.
Absolutely. And if you enjoy our podcast, go to gerwick.net at the bottom. Check out our audio section. We have years of audio dating back a number of great past interviews we've done. Definitely check those out. If you enjoy our podcast, we got older podcasts up there. Check out the Body Slam podcast as well. They get into kind of what we do a little bit with current topics and then old topics.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about the news for so long, and then you have to delve off into a different topic. So definitely check out the podcast, the Body Slam podcast with Atlee Green and the guys. They do a great job as well, giving you a different perspective on professional wrestling. And as always, we appreciate you listening and supporting us here at Gerwick.net.